Tina. I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, Ashley and I will bring you stories along with Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, the city of Kandahar in southern Afghanistan was once the center of the Taliban's Islamist government. But Kandahar is slowly changing into an energetic city of 700,000. It has busy eateries, universities with both men and women, and even a women's exercise center. Young men gather each night at the Arena Club, a popular gathering place in the city. They play games, watch sporting events, or smoke tobacco. Such activities were almost unthinkable when the Taliban ruled Afghanistan from 1996 to 2001. There was no such place in Kandahar when we built it, and there is still no other place in the entire south, said 30-year-old Nazir Ahmad, Arena's owner. Under Taliban rule, all kinds of entertainment were banned, from music and movies to kite flying. But the city's young people fear such freedoms may be lost again. The Taliban have increased its attacks in the area, even during peace talks with the government. Many in Kandahar still remember the public beatings and executions in open areas of the city. But Kandahar has experienced a huge change in recent years. Women can now be seen riding on motorcycles. Families enjoy eating together outdoors. Several city spaces have fountains that light up when the sun goes down. Street sellers serve hot Afghan food into the night. But the Taliban appear energized to fight back after a deal with the United States that secured the withdrawal of all foreign forces by May. They have strengthened their campaign against Afghan forces in rural areas. Afghanistan now faces the possibility of giving back some power to the Taliban, which U.S.-led forces have been unable to defeat for 19 years. The Taliban claim to control or contest more than half of the country, including large areas across southern Afghanistan. Kandahar City remains firmly in the control of government forces. But the Taliban are not far away. I hope the Taliban have changed and will let this club remain open, Arena's club owner Ahmad told reporters with Agence France-Presse. Café Delight is another popular eatery in the city. The café permits entry to female customers, something that is still uncommon in the city. What kind of peace would it be if they closed down our cafe? Asked the cafe's owner, Mohammed Yassin. We will not comply if the Taliban tell us not to accept female customers, he added. When the Taliban ruled Afghanistan, girls were banned from school. Women accused of crimes such as adultery were stoned to death at sports stadiums. But since the Taliban were ousted, women have made great progress in cities. They have taken jobs in the media, politics, and even the country's security forces. But some women in Kandahar fear they will lose some of their hard-won freedoms if the Taliban returns to power. There was only one school for girls, and now we have 15, said Mariam Durrani. The 36-year-old has established several projects for women, including an education center, a radio station, and an exercise center where some women secretly attend classes. There is a possibility that the Taliban may return and that restrictions could be imposed on women again, Durrani said. Others are more hopeful, like Shukriya Ali. She works at Radio Merman, the women-led station that Durrani started. The station recently received a prize from the press freedom group Reporters Without Borders. Maybe the Taliban have changed, Ali told AFP. Weeks after Ali spoke with AFP reporters, the country experienced a number of deadly and unclaimed attacks on reporters.
Hong Kong police arrested 53 democracy activists Wednesday on charges related to a new national security law. The move appears to be the biggest crackdown yet, using the law passed by the government in Beijing. Critics say it is meant to silence dissent in the former British territory. The raids largely targeted opposition candidates who took part last year in an independently organized, informal vote to be their party's candidates in the territory's legislative election. That election has been postponed. Police did not identify those arrested in the raid. Their identities, however, have been discovered through their social media accounts or have been reported by their organizations. Those arrested are former lawmakers, activists, and people involved in organizing the 2020 primaries. They include James To, Lam Chuk Ting, Benny Tai, and Lester Shum. About 1,000 police took part in the raid on at least 72 places. The raids included searches of a public opinion research group and a law firm. Among those arrested was U.S. lawyer John Clancy, who works for Ho Tse Y and Partners. The company was started by Albert Ho, who served as chairman of the Democratic Party of Hong Kong. The company also reported the raid on its offices on its website. Chris Patten, the last British governor of Hong Kong, commented on the situation. He said, "The Chinese Communist Party has further turned the screw in Hong Kong." Patten also said, "Liberal democracies around the world must continue to speak out against the brutal destruction of a free society."
Millions of people are waiting for their turn to receive the newly released COVID-19 vaccines. Delays in getting vaccines to the public, however, have led to a growing number of online scams claiming to offer the shots to anyone willing to pay the right price. Government officials in the United States and Europe are warning the public not to be fooled by such scams, which they say can be used to steal money and personal data. They can also endanger the health of people falling for the offers. Reuters news agency searched vaccine offers on internet websites, the Telegram messaging service, and places on the dark web. The dark web is a part of the internet that cannot be found through normal search engines. It uses digital tools to hide identifying information and is often used for criminal activity. The Reuters search found at least 7 different offers for products claiming to be COVID-19 vaccines. The scams include emails promising to get people on supposedly secret lists to receive the vaccine early. Other operations place telephone calls to the public claiming to be from government agencies. Messages on the dark web also are seeking to sell COVID-19 vaccines. On one dark web forum called Agartha, fake COVID-19 vaccines were offered next to cocaine, powerful pain medications, super high-quality fake money, and handguns. Listings showed images of the real vaccines, offering them for $500 to $1,000. On Telegram, several places claimed to offer COVID-19 vaccines. One user offered alleged Moderna vaccines for $180 and claimed the vaccine from Pfizer-BioNTech could be bought for $150. The U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation, International Policing Organization Interpol, and other law enforcement agencies are investigating the scams. They have warned that the illegal activities, which can also include offers for false treatments, could present serious health risks. Internet security company Recorded Future said new website domains containing the words vaccine and COVID-19 or coronavirus have more than doubled since October. More than 2,500 sites appeared by November, when the first real COVID-19 vaccines were nearing approval, the company said. Lindsay Kay is director of operations for Recorded Future. She told Reuters that some of the domain registrations appear to be aimed at getting people to click on malicious web links that could be used to steal private data. Kay said her investigative team has not yet uncovered any real vaccines being offered that came from healthcare providers or official national supplies. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, FDA, has approved 2 COVID-19 vaccines for emergency use. One was developed by Pfizer-BioNTech and the other by Moderna. In a statement, the FDA said it was concerned that other deceptive and misleading products might cause Americans to delay or stop appropriate medical treatment, leading to serious and life-threatening harm. The scams have grown as concerns continue about the slower-than-promised delivery of vaccines to protect against COVID-19. The disease has claimed more than 1.8 million lives worldwide. Experts say that most people will likely have to wait until the spring or summer to get their shots. By Monday, about 4.5 million Americans had received their first vaccine shot. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention reported. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The United States did not play a very large part in world events during the 1800s. At the beginning of the 1900s, however, it expanded its interests throughout the world. America's president at that time strongly supported the expansion. He was Theodore Roosevelt, a distantly related cousin of the future president, Franklin Roosevelt. Shirley Griffith and Frank Oliver complete the story of America's 26th president, who was also known as Teddy.
Theodore Roosevelt became president in 1901, after the assassination of President William McKinley. He completed the last 3 years of McKinley's term. Then he was elected in his own right. Those 4 years are spoken of as Roosevelt's second term. It was during this second term that Roosevelt gained his most important foreign policy success. He negotiated an end to a war between Russia and Japan. Later, he was asked to settle another international dispute. At issue was Morocco.
In 1904, France and Britain signed an agreement on North Africa. The agreement gave Britain control over Egypt. It gave France responsibility for security and reforms in Morocco. Germany opposed the agreement. It felt threatened by any French-British alliance, and it feared France would block German trade ties with Morocco. Germany demanded an open-door policy that would permit all countries to trade freely in Morocco. It proposed an international conference to settle the dispute. France and Britain rejected the idea. The ruler of Germany, Kaiser Wilhelm II, warned that the dispute could lead to war. The Kaiser asked Theodore Roosevelt to intervene.
President Roosevelt agreed to help. Some American lawmakers criticized him. They said it was an American tradition not to get involved in European disputes. But Roosevelt believed peace was more important than tradition. He set up the conference in the Spanish seaport of Algeciras. 12 European nations and the United States attended. The conference agreed to an open-door trade policy in Morocco. It organized an international bank to control Morocco's finances, and it gave France and Spain almost complete control over police forces in Morocco's port cities.
Theodore Roosevelt had become a powerful world leader. At home, however, he was losing power. One reason was an economic depression. Business leaders blamed it on Roosevelt. They said it was the result of his efforts to gain government control over industry. The other reason was one he had created himself. At that time, there was no law limiting a president's term in office. But America's first president, George Washington, had established a tradition of only two terms. When Theodore Roosevelt won the election of 1904, he announced he would not be a candidate in 1908. He had completed the term of President McKinley. He would serve a full term of his own. That was enough. Later he said, "I would be willing to cut off my hand if I could call back that statement."
During his last year in office, Roosevelt was a lame duck president. Everyone knew he would not be back. There was little political reason to support him. He faced increased opposition from Congress and from his own Republican Party. His final message to Congress was extremely bitter. President Roosevelt accused Congress and the court system of working only to help rich Americans. He called for a tax on earnings. He called for legislation to give workers a greater share of the nation's wealth. The House of Representatives voted to reject the message. It said Roosevelt had failed to show respect for the legislative branch of government.
Roosevelt refused to give up hope for the policies he believed America needed. He would not be able to fight for these policies himself, but he could find a presidential candidate who would. He was sure the people would vote for his choice. He decided on his close friend, Secretary of War William Howard Taft. Taft had spent most of his life in government service. He had been a judge in both a state court and a federal court. He had been a lawyer in the Justice Department. And he had been governor of the Philippines.
There was one problem, however. Taft did not want to be president. He really wanted to be Chief Justice of the United States. But there were no immediate openings on the Supreme Court. Also, his wife, his brothers, and his good friend, Theodore Roosevelt, urged him to run. So Taft agreed to be a candidate for the Republican presidential nomination in 1908. When he won the nomination, Taft said, "Mr. Roosevelt led the way to reform. My job, if elected, will be to complete and perfect his programs." The Democratic Party nominated William Jennings Bryan. Bryan had been a candidate two times before without success.
The presidential campaign was not especially exciting. William Howard Taft did not like being on the campaign trail. He was a big, heavy man. He did not like to travel. Roosevelt urged him to campaign with more energy. "Hit hard, old man," Roosevelt said. "Make the people see the truth. Let them know that, for all your gentleness and kindliness, there never existed a man who was a better fighter when the need arose." Roosevelt's advice and strong support helped Taft win a big victory on Election Day.
A few weeks after Taft was sworn in as president, Roosevelt left on a year-long trip overseas. He spent most of the time hunting wild animals in Africa. President Taft wrote a warm goodbye letter to his friend. He promised to do his best as president. But he admitted he could not lead as Roosevelt had done. In fact, Taft said, he was still surprised when anyone called him Mr. President. Each time it happened, he turned around to see if Roosevelt was there.
There was no question that Taft's way of leading was much different from Roosevelt's. Taft believed a president should not interfere too deeply in the actions of Congress. He also believed a president should not claim special powers or rights. He believed in the supreme power of the law, even if the law did not work very well. The progressives who had supported Roosevelt did not support Taft. They said he was too friendly with conservatives. They said he had surrendered to special interest groups. Taft, for his part, did not like progressives. He thought they were too emotional and extreme.
Yet Taft worked hard to put into law many parts of Roosevelt's progressive programs. He was successful in several areas. During his administration, for example, a separate Department of Labor was established. Two constitutional amendments won congressional approval and were sent to the states for ratification. One amendment provided for a federal tax on earnings. The other provided for direct, popular election of senators. Taft also worked even harder than Roosevelt to break up companies or trusts that blocked economic competition.
At the same time, Taft failed in several areas. He signed legislation that lowered import taxes. Neither businessmen nor progressive Republicans liked it. He negotiated a free trade agreement with Canada. The Canadian Parliament rejected it. He believed in protecting America's wilderness areas, yet he did not believe existing laws gave him the right to close public lands to private development. So he was seen as an enemy of conservation. These struggles and failures made Taft's 4 years as president the unhappiest of his life.
The final blow came in an effort to reduce the powers of the Speaker of the House of Representatives. The Speaker was a conservative Republican. Progressive Republicans opposed him. The issue split the party. Theodore Roosevelt, far from home, read about the trouble. He had promised to stay out of politics. But each of the opposing groups in his party had asked for his support.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.